Hello, this is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Alex Levchuk.
Excellent. OK, the weather today, 9 degrees centigrade is going to be our high, 6 degrees centigrade will be the low. There'll be bright spells at first, but scattered heavy showers will be developing later. What's the weather like in Staffordshire, Sarah?
Oh, it's a bit grey.
It's important to know. Okay, moving on, Farmers on Film. There are one or two people who might have actually forgotten all about this. I can't believe that, but what the hey. We started it off in the Olympic year, or you started it off, let's be honest, back in 2012. It's still growing, it's still developing. It's even got Australian farmers involved with it.
Oh, definitely, Alex. Absolutely stunning news last week. There's a gentleman called Mick Russell, and he saw all the little films that we'd been doing, and he said, you know what, I can do that. So he'd got a passion for filming, he's got a passion for farmers and getting that story of the farmer to the consumer. So he crowdfunded just for some little GoPro video cameras so he could send out to these farmers. And he got the funding, and he's just starting to bring the films out now. So we had four last week. I'm just looking at some goats at Bruny Island. Absolutely stunning little story there about the goat lady and the little goats. He's done one on apples, one on beef cattle that's fed on grass. They actually grow the grass in like hydroponics. And they've got another one, another goat story. So he's bringing these stories of these people to, well, at the moment it's YouTube. But they're absolutely, well, to Vimeo, it's absolutely amazing that he's taken this on. He's going to do another 36 little films and people are loving them.
Genuinely fantastic stuff, and proving obviously that it is a global industry, this farming malarkey. And it's very much a case of celebrating the best of things that farmers actually do, not just in Australia, but obviously in Britain as well.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Well, we are just going to get the final arrangements. We did launch last year a competition to try and find the best cheese producer on film, and I'm working with the International Cheese Show to finalise what the actual categories are. And that should be out pretty soon, and we're going to absolutely try and inspire all the people that make cheese in Britain and overseas to get these films into our little competition. And I think we're going to have a little masterclass as well where we can get filmmakers, we get the people from the Visit Britain, Visit England, into the cheese show at Nantwich this year, and we get them all talking about how we can use film to really, truly, honestly promote these small producers, and larger producers, but how we can promote the rural environment, tourism, food through film.
I think you must give us the dates of the Nantwich Cheese Show. It sounds as though we should actually be there, if only for the cheesy presenters on Siren 107.3 FM.
Listen, I tell you what, last year we went, they'd got an absolutely amazing press section. It was lovely. There was tea, coffee, there was seats, there was sofas.
Cheese, perhaps?
And cheese, lots of cheese. Yeah. But this is what it's all about. It's about trying to encourage the producers to not be scared to go into the media, onto the radio, onto film, and onto the TV, onto Vimeo, YouTube, and get them to actually see what is actually going on there. Because at the moment, there's masses going on. It's really, really exciting. Compared to when we started, they're doing a selfie, they've got people tweeting, people are tweeting from the farmyard. Absolutely brilliant. And I think we need to continually bring the creative industries now together with the farmers and say, look, how can we take this to the next stage?
And we will, as I say, we've been working on that, we will continue to do so. A little heads up from, it really should slot into the events diary, but John Wenham seems to have missed this one. No, I'm sure he hasn't, he'll be on the case. But the For the Love of Pets Fair actually takes place this Saturday on the 29th of March 2014, of course, yes, let's get the year right. It's 10 a.m. through to 3 p.m. at St Mary Le Wigford Church this Saturday. It's the For the Love of Pets Fair. It's a local charity trying to raise money to help those in need. All funds, obviously, to help local companions. Animals. Dog-friendly dogs are not only allowed but indeed encouraged, and there'll be second-hand animal items, a variety of stalls from pet portraits to aloe vera products, as though Minty Steed with the Southside Terriers and Siren FM Terriers could be interested from that point of view. You can even actually get your dog microchipped for the day by a vet-trained microchipper for £10. Well, there we are. That's For the Love of Pets Fair at Wigford Church in Lincoln this Saturday. Now, off times, you're regularly off to the House of Lords. You were there recently, and you're promoting this other aspect with, of course, the fantastic chamber at the House of Lords. I'm sure it is a fantastic chamber. About the roundabout, which, of course, is no more and has been replaced by something else in terms of crossing, which is no good if you happen to be visually impaired.
That's right, Alex. What it is that we had, when they removed the roundabout, they put in a system of called shared space. And what that is when they remove the curbs and they make it flat with the road and they take all the crossings away. So we had a crazy situation as they put traffic lights and shared space into our tiny area, and it's totally confusing. But because nobody would listen to what our concerns were for the blind, we went and investigated across the country, and we found out there were problems with this shared space, not just in Leek, but there was problems in Coventry, in Warwick, in Southend-on-Sea, in London, in Wakefield. And we went out and made a film about it, and we went specifically to the blind people and the partially sighted people that have these problems. And we launched it, we premiered it in the House of Lords to wake up the architects, the engineers, the planners, the lords, the ladies, the MPs, everybody to say, look, this is a problem. And the film is a very challenging film of our time to look at these real social issues that, you know, the planners and engineers and architects are designing out these truly blind people from these areas. And we have to wake them up to say, look, you can't do this. You've got to bring them into the conversation. You've got to bring them into the design. So this is what this film is doing, and it is quite effective. We showed it in front of the Transport Select Committee in January, and they wanted action upon it. They were quite mortified to what they saw. We showed it yesterday in Coventry, and it did open quite a good debate between the planners and the blind people in the room. And it was quite challenging, but it was definitely a good conversation to have, and we're going to carry that conversation on with them. And we've got Eastbourne Council and East Sussex County Council. They're organising us to go and show the film to them so they can make sure their new design for their urban environments absolutely ensure that the blind people can access them safely, securely, and without fear.
And the moral of the story is surely when Gayton's on the case, Gayton's on the case. There we are, SG, another top line there. Farmers on Film, which you can access through YouTube and all of those wonderful things. Just actually use the search engine facilities to actually type in Farmers on Film. You'll see that. And, of course, the shared space challenges, which we actually get, and how you can actually make what is, again, sometimes people take it for granted, crossing the road, etc. Hedgehogs don't. We'll find out about that in the next few moments with Dr. Tony Bunnell. About hedgehog care. Where do you sort of concern yourself about hedgehogs, or do you think, oh, I'm not really a hedgehog person, Sarah?
Oh, well, I tell you what, they get squashed.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You've got to protect them. I mean, that's the thing is that, again, you know, it's they're lovely, aren't they? I mean, everyone grew up with the hedgehog stories, you know. you can't not love them, can you, Alex?
I'd like to think that we care about our hedgehogs.
Definitely.
And I refuse to reprise William Sitwell's line last week when he actually dared to say, you know, why did the hedgehog cross the road to see his flatmate? Please. Why did the hedgehog cross the road? Because he's got guts. It's not good. I don't know why I even, you know. Coming up, another William Coles, The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream, his latest fantastic romantic fiction novel, which is beautifully put together. We'll be speaking to William in a few moments. But meanwhile, Sarah Gayton, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
Absolutely. And I'm going to tweet the new films from Australia to your tweet.
That's tweet what thing. We'd like to see. Good.
Hey, and listen, I've just realised that you've won an award.
Yeah, East Midlands Radio Station of the Year.
Absolutely, yeah. Stunning. I'm very impressed, yeah. I am.
It's all important stuff. Good morning, Jill Hart. Just sending a little Facebook update there, so good stuff from that point of view. So, decisions, Sarah. Nick Straker Band or Cliff Richard and Engelbert Humperdinck? Where do you think we should go?
Oh, Mr. Humperdinck, whatever his name is. The second
one. Fine. Sarah Gayton, you will return.
Thank you so much.
The sun is shining, there's plenty of light.
One of those tunes where you feel you shouldn't really like it, but you do. Engelbert Humperdinck and Cliff Richard. Since I Lost My Baby. Was it written about the woman who was the desert dream? I don't know. Maybe the person who can answer that is the ace author of this superlative text, which I consumed voraciously in all sorts of ways over the last few days because he was kind enough to actually deliver it and sort of hand it personally and sign it, is the legend that is William Coles. William, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
excellent. We're still recovering from the reverberations of your sensational appearance at the University of Lincoln and already planning for a return journey in the very near future, as well as Lincoln Inspired and a whole heap of other goodies. Yes, I think it's fair to say that the Kohlsmeister has conquered Lincoln. So there we are. Brilliant stuff there. And curiously enough, one of my key questions I had with respect to the woman who was the Desert Dream, until I actually read the opening introductory side of things, was, is it autobiographical? And of course, in the acknowledgements, in 2012, I was lucky enough to take part in the Marathon des Sables, the Marathon of the Sands, a strange, glorious midlife rite of passage where mad, middle-aged men tend to put themselves through the whole process. Women also run the race, but not nearly as downright odd as the men. Was it autobiographical? Because, I mean, some of the characters... I mean, one, to a certain extent, one felt that the character of Dell, well, you really should have shot him if he was a horse, in essence. But, you know, was he real? Have we mentioned was there a Dell who was actually in there who went off saying, I'll kill you, William Coles, I'll kill you now? Or was that effect?
In the Marathon des Sables, this 150-mile race through the Sahara, there are a lot of strange people.
Yeah.
And one of the strangest that I came across was this guy, Rory Coleman.
Uh-huh.
And he's done a lot of Marathon Day stops. He's done about 8 or 9, maybe 10. And he's a very strange man, more strange than most. And so he was largely the basis for this guy, Dell. But there are a load of weirdos on this race. If you're doing this race, you're going to be surrounded by weirdos, and you are probably a weirdo yourself.
Well, I mean, now steady on, William. I mean, because clearly, you know, from the autobiographical perspective, I mean, this was what crossed my mind insofar as never in the field of human existence would I even consider doing this particular kind of thing. I'm speaking to somebody who enjoys tennis, enjoys football, enjoys team sports, even badminton, what the hey. But cross-country running just left me cold. And, you know, having said all that, there is a kind of echo and a resonance of the loneliness of the long-distance runner, you know, a well-worn sort of classic movie of our time, but through the desert. And working through that whole process, you obviously tie in your own experience as one of the Sun's top premier reporters. What was it that actually said, that sort of emerged in you one day to say, I'm going to run this race, what the heck, the Foreign Legion is shut down, so I can't join the Foreign Legion, so I'm going to run that race?
I had been running marathons for a while, but the training was grueling. But when I'd done my first marathon in New York about 17 years ago, this friend had told me about the Marathon des Sables, this huge race in the Sahara, and I thought, nice, interesting. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of, what happens is it eats away at you. And gradually, when I hit 40, I realized that if I didn't run this race anytime soon, then I would not run it at all, and that would have been a miss. I would have been sitting there in my dotage in front of the fire, thinking about
this was
I hadn't gone for.
This was on your bucket list then, William?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
It's exactly. And a lot of these things on the bucket list, if you don't do them soon, you've missed it. You know, you can't do them when you're...
It surely depends on your life viewpoint. I mean, if you believe it's part of a choice and a sort of recyclable thing, etc., and there's more than one life, then you can do it as many times as you want. Only kidding there, but obviously other philosophical
right.
views are available.
Yeah, well, of course, it's we all hope that we will be coming back many times over, but...
We might not, of course.
I think it's best to proceed on the assumption that you're not.
Okay, yeah. I can take that. It's coming up to 19 minutes past 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning here for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Not the most positive side of the uplifting thought, but, I mean, this is the thing that comes through it insofar as, you know, as one's reading through the superb descriptions that you actually give of the pain, literally, the pain of the agony. And Kate, I mean, bless her heart, you know, what with respect to the slicing of the blister. Now, you know, speaking as one who, as folk know, likes the country shows, likes to actually sort of do the general sort of wander around, but basically, that, occasionally blisters do manifest. I wouldn't take a knife to them, though, but was it just a case of you go through that whole pain barrier to actually soak up the goodness?
Yes. On the Marathon des Sables, you're going to get a lot of blisters. They're pretty much unavoidable. And you've got to treat them very well. If you don't treat them, they're going to get a lot worse. Mm. But one of the things about it is that you will probably experience more pain than you've ever experienced. I'm not saying something with childbirth, but for guys, And obviously, when the pain ends, it is just total bliss when you've been tramping through the desert all day and finally you get to put your feet up and eat this disgusting food, Rego recovery powder, which is pretty foul, like custard. But when you're eating it and you're sitting there with your sort of feet up, it is bliss. And that is as a result of going through hell. So, you know, the worse things are, the better the, you know, it's a swing. You're going to have a swing.
Okay, well, we've just been joined in the studio by Gabriella Peralta, our girl from Gibraltar. She's always good. Gabriella, a random number, please, between 2 and 200, please.
15.
Going to go for a low number from that sort of point of view. Okay, well, a little sample here, hopefully with respect to the whole thing of where we're actually going with respect to the woman who was the Desert Dream. Thank you, she said. I'll pay you back. No, there's really no need. I'd like to pay you back. Honestly, it's a pleasure. I watched as Sarah walked to her table. She looked back and waved at me. A random act of kindness. I'm a big fan. I pay for my lunch and for the food on Grubby's tray. It'll be very nice today, Grubby said. What about this girl behind us? You gonna pay for her too? I looked over. Grubby was in the way. So all I could see was a young woman's hand, free of rings, scooping up a huge spoonful of macaroni cheese. Already on her tray was some bacon and 3 crispy sausages, as well as 2-litre bottle of fizzy water. She plucked up a bowl of trifle and an orange and a banana and an apple, and then a Kit Kat. Grubby looked on in admiration. You're really going for it. And that's when I realised just who had been loading up this gargantuan meal. Kate's blonde hair was loose about her shoulders. Her skin was flawless, so fine that she did not need makeup, and she had just the merest trace of lipstick. She was wearing thin white cords and a red shirt. Compared to the rest of the raddled hacks who inhabited the Sun newsroom, she just looked so unbelievably wholesome. She glanced down at her tray and laughed. It does look a lot. Do you know Kate? Grubby asked me. We were working together on a feature last week. Kate, this is Kim, leader writer of The Sun Says and other dreary articles never read by the readers. I smiled at him, for what he said may have been in jest, but it was also the truth. Sun readers, I'm well aware, have no interest in my hard-hitting columns or my pithy nuggets that appear on the page 2 graveyard. I'm sure that was not the case when you were writing that particular material, William. Anyway, a little sample there of the opening sequence. And when you get a hold of the book, Gabriella, which I know you will, and indeed any right-thinking journalist will actually get a hold of William Coles as the woman who was the Desert Dream, you'll see there's a heart-rendering pinch featuring Grubby at the end where he actually makes a kind of cutting-off routine. And you think, no, that's as bad as saying, I think you're great, just like my brother. Don't go there! Anyway, I don't want to give too much of the romance away, but Kim and Kate, was that a kind of a reasonable sort of scene setter that we actually had there from obviously page 15 of the Thames River Press version of William Coles, The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream?
There are a couple of journalists on The Sun, and that's where they meet, in the Sun canteen.
Is this a regular occurrence that Rupert Murdoch is well aware of, or perhaps we shouldn't go there? Maybe not, actually.
What, start fancying each other? Yes, tabloid newsrooms are hotbeds of sex. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're hard at it, as you can see from the hacking trial.
Well.
Even the editors are sleeping with each other.
Yeah, obviously we will sort of draw a veil over that and leave it to the industrial sort of machinations of all sorts of other things to work that particular one through. Moving on, I mean, one of the other things I was tempted to suggest that Kim should have actually done was produce that really intensive nugget of information, which seems to have been dropped recently, ever since, I think, well, a number of sort of things came through there, which was obviously, what did the page 3 girl think of the issues of the day? Well, you'd usually have some sort of philosophical quote. I thought it was wonderful. Nice little way on that sort of basis. Writing this. Anyway, I'm wandering again, probably because I'm off to actually talk about Edwardian science fiction literature and proto-science fiction stuff to a group of English students in about 35 minutes. Enough of such.
Send them my love.
Of course, absolutely. I will fully intend to. You know, yours and H.G. Wells, two writers across the centuries, but still connected by a love of English. Gabriella, any questions for Bill Coles or William Coles, which of course he is today, as we talk about the woman who was the Desert Dream?
Really, how long did it take to write the book? How was it? Was it difficult, really, to...
Was it difficult,
yeah.
William? Was it difficult dredging up all those memories all that time?
It took about 3 months to write the book, and while I'd been running this race, they have various, each day is a stage, and you've got various water points, about three water points where you, every 10 miles or so, where you get more water. And I would sit there in the sand and scribble down all my mild musings, and scribble and scribble, and filled up an entire notebook with the detail of the race, because it's the detail that makes any book. You're hoping that it's a pace turn as well, but what readers generally want.
In particular, Charles and Carmilla, I thought, were very good as the sort of two camels who actually kept the race sort of ticking over. And obviously, Gabriella, if you are overtaken by Charles and Carmilla, problems.
Yeah.
Yes. Problems.
There are these, in the marathon they sub, there are these two camels called Charles and Carmilla who are trudging along at about 2 miles an hour. And if you're straggling along and if you're overtaken by Charles and Carmilla, then your race is over. You're out.
Outrageous. So, Gabriella, I know you're mostly defined as Gibraltar's top high heels and sort of well-turned out young lady. Will you be taking part in this Marathon des Sables in the near future?
Maybe not.
I think that's a no,
I'm not
William.
I'm wearing heels. I don't ever wear them.
Well, there we are, you see. I was choking with the emotion of the whole thing. I can categorically say that it's highly unlikely I will.
Just want to point shame. Out. You'd love it. They had, there was one
it would kill me, William.
80 years old.
I'm sure, exactly. But, you know, how old are you? No, don't go there, anyway. Yes, all right. Well, obviously, if it's there, if you feel moved to do it, then go for it. I mean, are you still running marathons?
No, I'm not running marathons. I'm doing bizarre swims now. I tried last year and failed last year to swim the Hellespont, this big waterway in Turkey. So come August the 30th, I will be back at the Hellespont. Yes, I'm fed up with running. I do a bit of running, but swimming is the way forward.
And yet again, you see, I see in the little teaser trailer, the little snippet for the book that comes after, of course, the woman who, Gabrielle, the rest of the title is... Yeah, you see, we work very hard here. She's looking at the back of the book so far, the whole thing. Anyway, what I'm talking about is you're going into swimming next, are you not, with respect to your next literary piece that emerges very shortly?
Yeah, The Woman Who Dared Stare. Rather than running, it's about a woman who's a swimmer. She's a great swimmer, and they go off swimming, of all things. Well, first of all, they swim the Thames, which is hairy, and then they swim the Hellespont.
The Woman Who Dared to Dare, following, of course, The Woman Who Was the Desert's Dream. And, of course, the other classic lines that sort of come through in every sense of the word, which we've had previously produced by... I mean, any reason why William Coles is used as opposed to Bill Coles, as far as the author...
Yeah, Bill is the grubby tabloid hack. He's the reporter. And William is the writer of fine literary fiction. As regards love stories, William is obviously sound.
The well-tempered,
more appropriate than Bill.
The well-tempered clavier, the woman who made men cry, and, of course, the woman who knew what she wanted. Lots of lovely little lines here, including, of course, a lovely nod in the direction of shark's teeth, fossilised shark's teeth, let's be precise. Cherish yours if you happen to have one. We now move on to the slot, which we're calling Let's Give Gabriella Peralta Some Advice. Gabriella, what will you be doing this morning, and how can possibly William Coles provide you with some advice?
Well, as similar to the past couple of weeks.
Yes.
I don't actually know what I'm doing this morning.
You don't actually know what you're doing this morning. Where will you be not knowing what you're doing this morning?
Where?
Yes.
Upstairs.
Which
in newsroom one, yeah.
In newsroom one.
In the television newsroom.
In the television newsroom. And what sort of things will you be sort of thinking about there?
Well, we're talking about our documentaries that we're currently filming.
Right.
Which is a 10-minute... short documentary, really.
Okay, right, so that gives you something to work with, William. So, you know, what advice would you give Gabriella today to actually sort of, you know, stand out in terms of this area where she doesn't quite know what she's doing, but she's up there in Newsroom 1 talking about documentaries and such like?
First thing is to go in with a positive mental attitude, i.e. you go in with coffees and cakes for all your colleagues who you're going to be having this discussion with, particularly bosses. You cannot give bosses too much coffee or cakes. You know, it makes them feel warmly towards you. So go in with fully loaded with cakes and coffees and stuff like that. So are you having a sort of brainstorming session, Gabrielle?
Well, we've already... most of us have already started filming our documentaries, and mine's on the Gibraltar border problems that we're having. And
sure.
I've already started filming that during Christmas, and I've got about 9 interviews, and it's just really now weeding out what's good, what's bad, and seeing what we can make of it, and just go back in a couple of weeks and continue.
Oh, right. Well, this is a progress report you're giving.
Yeah.
You've just got to carry on chipping away at the pit face. You've started, and you've just got to carry on slogging away. And what people like is cheery optimism. We do not like whiners. We're surrounded by whiners all the time. All they do is complain. Well, if you're complaining, you don't want to complain. Just get out. We don't whine ever. If it's a progress report of a big project in progress, then you are cheery. That's what people like. Those are the people that bosses like to surround themselves with.
There we are.
What do you think, Alex?
I was thinking, we were just going to use those last two questions, but bang, straight in there with the surprise. Let's have Will Coles providing advice for a final year journalism student. Genius. But I know there are folk out there who love those last two questions, so Gabriella, go with those last two questions. Go now.
Bill, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
No. It's more, way, way more than reasonably interesting. It's been fantastic. It's been a heart starter for the day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And will you be connecting with us again?
Yes, always. Yeah. I mean, Alex is only a phone call away.
Bill
Tell
Coles.
Him to give me a call. Well, I'll send him another book.
I think we're already looking at a William Coles regular feature. And as I say, I think the challenges of William Coles meets William Sitwell, kind of versus, or featuring, to use the vernacular, maybe with a bit of Tiny Templar or possibly Rizzle Kicks in there. I think there's a line to be dealt with. If we can have Engelbert and Cliff Richard, we can certainly have William Coles and William Sitwell. Just a thought. Hedgehog's next.